1000 Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 31st of August, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Alex Vanderwill, in for Rob Linton.
And we couldn't possibly be happier. It is 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you all the news and views and stuff you can lose and stuff to choose on.
31?
The 31st. You got a problem with that?
Yeah. What happened to the 31st?
I haven't had enough coffee for it to be the 31st. It's the 31st.
Okay. Just something different.
All right, I should tell you.
The unofficial end of summer anyway. So.
That's exactly right. We are going to have a very special guest in the second hour of Soundbites tonight. John Pollard is going to be here. He is the CEO of a company called Jot.com. John Pollard of Jot.com. Jot is so cool. You make a cell phone call to this thing, and it says, you know, who do you want to call? And you name somebody who's on your list. You create a list on Jot's website, and you say, okay, I want to call Dave Enright. It says, okay. And then you just announce your message. You say your message, and he gets it as a text message. They also do reminders and to-dos, and oh, it's just beyond cool. And he's going to come on the show today, and he's going to tell us all about Jot.com, and that's pretty cool. But we also, of course, have a poll. We won't be talking about the poll at the top of the second hour because we'll have the Jot guy on, but somebody calls in on time. So our poll this week is about PsyStar, the Mac clone maker that was sued by Apple last month. Well, they fired back on Tuesday with a countersuit charging Apple with restraint of trade, unfair competition, and other violations of antitrust law. PsyStar Corporation, which is a Doral, Florida, based seller of Intel-based computers, said it has filed paperwork with a San Francisco federal court answering Apple's July 3rd lawsuit and replying with one of its own. We are alleging restraint of trade, among other things, said Colby Springer, one of three lawyers from the firm of Carr & Farrell LLP representing PsyStar. This was during a press conference held Tuesday. We're going to let the court decide. Springer said that the countersuit accuses Apple of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act. What? They carted underage computers across state lines. And the Clayton Antitrust Act, in particular, for tying its Mac OS X operating system to its own hardware in the end-user licensing agreement. Because the EULA bars users from installing the operating system on non-Apple hardware, Springer said, it's unlawful restraint of trade. Apple makes a good operating system. We don't deny that, said Springer. This is about bringing Leopard, Mac OS X 10.5, to the masses. Rudy Pedraza, the president and co-founder of PsyStar, said somewhat the same thing. It's not that people don't want to use Mac OS X, but they're not open to spending an exorbitant amount of money on something that's essentially generic hardware. PsyStar, which has sold the Intel-based Open Computer Desktop starting at $555 since April, and the OpenServe servers since June, was sued by Apple last month on the basis of the Mac OS X end-user license agreement. In the lawsuit, Apple charged PsyStar with copyright and trademark infringement, breach of contract, unfair competition, because the Florida firm pre-installed its operating system on their own hardware. One expert in intellectual property litigation said last month that Apple's victory would probably put PsyStar out of business, since if victorious, Apple would demand that PsyStar recall the machines that it sold to customers.
They already have demanded that in their initial lawsuit.
Right. In an interview earlier this month, Springer hinted that Carr and Farrell's defense would include antitrust elements. Springer denied reports that PsyStar was pirating or modifying Apple software. Every single copy of the operating system is a purchased copy, said Springer. Despite the allegations that there's a master disk, that's not the case. And allegations that PsyStar has somehow modified OS X's code to run on non-Apple systems, that's also not the case. There is no modification of any proprietary code of Apple, Springer claimed. PsyStar, however, has modified some of the open source code that ships with Mac OS X, Springer acknowledged. But he maintained that any modifications were under the licenses of each open source component. If that's true, of course, then what we're going to see is PsyStar will win the case. theoretically.
Yeah. Well, as long as they're buying legit copies and not really modifying, how is that illegal?
Right. It isn't.
I mean, they're getting paid their money. They want not only the money, but they also want to say only on our equipment, and that's wrong.
Well, I can't put Chevy parts in my Ford. And is that Chevy's fault or Ford's fault? Or
well, they
fault?
Make them different, but if they made them identical and told you you couldn't, who would follow that?
Right.
And the thing wait a minute. There are other parts. There are third-party parts.
Oil that you filters, can, for example.
Right. That you can put on, well, even for Ford. If I got a Ford, they make generic parts that will fit both Ford, you know, and they're not the Ford parts.
Just like there are generic parts, you know, like hard drives and RAM and virtually everything that runs on Mac or Windows. The big issue from Apple's standpoint is that depending on how the copyright laws are interpreted, or not the laws, the violation of the copyright, SciStar is breaking the DMCA by going around Apple's copyright to install the Mac OS on a non-Apple machine.
Assuming the DMCA is enforceable.
Right. So there's a lot of subtle, there's the shrink wrap license law that's never been tested in court, the DMCA has never really been tested, so this is going to be a huge precedent case for other things.
Yeah, but for them to say that it can only go on their equipment, that's...
Well, that was part of the argument that broke up IBM in the late 60s, early 70s, was that they couldn't bundle.
There is precedence.
Right.
And if the lawyers for SciStar can convince a jury, or I guess in this case so far a judge, that what Apple is doing is bundling, then there is definite precedence.
And I have to back up. I misspoke there. I didn't mean that IBM was broken up, but they were told to conduct business in other ways than they were.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, the reality is that it's a lawsuit, so there's 100 billion paths this thing can take before we ever get anywhere real. But the deal is we'll see what happens with that. I don't know. Conceptually, now I understand Mac makes great hardware.
Well, and the big thing is that SciStar is filling a niche that Apple has not with the mid tower, something between a Mac Mini, and which is $500, and a Mac Pro, which is $2,500.
Right.
So it's a market that people have been clamoring for that Apple hasn't addressed, presumably for their own reasons.
Well, what if an enterprising individual were to take a Mac Mini, for example, put it in a slightly larger box, put on a couple of goodies that Apple doesn't provide in such a compact system,
the biggest issue,
then it would still be Mac OS X on Mac hardware.
The biggest issue that people want are multiple hard drives, which the Mini can't support internally. You use FireWire externally. And slots. I want to put a slot on to have a second monitor, third monitor, or other type of things. So using a generic PC motherboard with slots and multiple hard drive controllers, and then loading the Mac OS on it. What they're bypassing is the TPM on the Intel motherboards. In order to get the Mac OS to run on a non-Apple, labeled, OEM motherboard, they have to bypass the TPM.
Which stands for what?
The Trusted Machine, Trusted Platform Machine, something like that. Trusted Platform Module is a thing that Intel and other companies can put on their hardware to prove that you purchased it properly.
I don't see how they can get away with it. And it's like Microsoft saying, all right, you can only put it on one particular brand of computer. Everybody else be damned. I mean, Microsoft, as long as you buy the license for the software, you can put it on any combination of hardware you want. Well, so why
as long
shouldn't
as it's Intel?
No, AMD.
Yeah, but you
which
can't,
is an Intel computer. Which is an Intel platform.
You can't put it on any other. Right, you can't put it on a Spark. You can't put it on.
Exactly.
You remember, I predicted this.
Yeah.
We all did. When Apple transformed themselves from a Motorola PowerPC based company to an Intel company, I said, here come the clones. We all did, because the thing is...
They opened the floodgates.
Is this the same thing that happened to IBM?
It took them a month,
generic,
right?
Yeah, exactly. It took them generic, off-the-shelf parts and made a computer. And the reason they did that, of course, is famously, they couldn't think of selling more than about 5,000 of them ever, so they didn't want to spend a lot of time and money and effort engineering it.
And then when Chips and Technologies was able to clone the BIOS...
Right.
That was Microsoft's biggest deal. They bought what became DOS and have a non-exclusive license, and IBM said, okay, sure, because no one's going to buy computers. So they had to write a special DOS for Compaq, a special different DOS for K-Pro, a special different DOS for TI. So,
weren't all that different.
Right, they weren't all that different, which means you didn't have to do that much work to rake in all that more money.
Right. Right.
And that's okay.
Yes, it is. But that's the deal that Apple's looking at right now. They're running on generic hardware. Nobody can tell SciStar they can't build the boxes.
Right.
So what they're going after is they've broken the end user license agreement. On the other hand, they're not the end user.
Well, if they're the one that purchased it, yeah, you're right. They're the initial purchaser, but not the end user.
Well, they are, I forget the exact word. When they buy it, there's also a resale issue involved in the end user license agreement.
And so is that restrictive?
They are buying it, and they are reselling it.
Maybe.
I haven't read the license lately, but you might have to get permission to resell it. And that's a common thing in software license agreements.
Right.
You can't just sell your software. In most cases, you have to get permission of the license owner to resell it,
which no one ever does. All this stuff is covered under contract law. There's no governmental body has ever said it's illegal to do what SciStar is doing.
Right.
It's only against an agreement between parties.
Right. This would be a civil suit of some sort.
Right.
All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller, Richard from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Richard. What's your question?
Great show.
Thank you.
I have a question. I've heard you talk about it. The question is Vista software.
Yes.
I had to buy a laptop for my granddaughter going away to college. And I looked at a bunch of them, and I said, well, there's only one way to do this. I believe you got to have all the RAM that you can stick in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally bought one, and I put 4 gig of RAM in it.
Good.
So do you think there'll be a problem for a college student just doing a lot of writing, maybe a few emails, but basically that's it?
4 gig of RAM should be fine. Mm-hmm. The other part of the question with Vista is always the video card.
And how much hard disk space.
So
hard disk, I think it was 160.
Oh, you're good then. You're good.
That'll do.
So the only question becomes the video card. And what that just means is she may not be able to do some high-end stuff like gaming and things like that.
Honestly, you
don't care because she's in college and she should be working. But in terms of the rest of the system, that should be just fine.
The other half of the issue is software, which has been one of Vista's biggest sticking points, too, is what software are you going to buy with it? If you buy everything new, it's probably okay. But if you're trying to use the old versions of some program you have lying around.
I purchased Word, Excel, and PowerPoint with it.
She should be good then.
Great. Thank you very much. Guys.
And would you care to adopt me?
Yeah, exactly.
Think of it as Richard. What you should have done is waited and gotten the Word, Excel, and PowerPoint at school. Because if you paid, $400 or $500 for that?
They do have the home and student version. There's $150 free license home and student version. But if you paid just under $400, you paid too much.
Well,
that's okay. He got it and she's good. So we're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Thank you very much. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Van... Oh, crap. I forgot. What is it, Alex?
Vanderwiel.
Alex Vanderwiel.
Vanderwiel. Vanderwiel? Vanderwiel. Okay. I'm a mess today.
Say it three times real fast.
Vanderwiel, Vanderwiel, Vanderwiel.
No,
I still won't remember.
We're rolling.
I didn't wear my red shoes today.
That was it. You know, we can't see your feet anyway. I didn't mean to tell you that, but we can't. Right, the red shoes. We're going to take a break. It's 20 minutes after the hour. We are going to desperately attempt to pull ourselves together, and we will be back on the other side of these little economic dramas with a whole lot more of the greatest computer show in the known universe, and maybe not today, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Sing it right away. Now here is what you say. So sing it while you may. Here's a silly jingle. You can sing it night or noon. Here's the words. That's all you need. Because I just sang the tune. Oh, I don't want her. You can have
her. Oh, my God. All right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
Now you got to play Queen's Fat Bottom Girls. Make the rockin' world go round.
I'll see if I can find it in the next break.
Very good, Alex.
It's 24 minutes after the hour, and that break courtesy of Chris Reich, who specifically asked for Polka.
Thank you.
All right, here's one that that strikes me personally at home. I hope not. A recently stolen laptop contained the names, birth dates, and social security numbers of around 12,700 applicants to the National Technical Institute for the Deaf, and another 1,100 people at Rochester Institute of Technology, according to our IT officials yesterday morning in an email message to the campus community. The laptop belonged to an employee and was stolen on last Monday, and we were informed yesterday from an office at NTID, officials said in a separate message on the university's website. People at RIT who are not affiliated with NTID are affected because their personal information was being used as part of a control group in an internal study, officials said. Letters were mailed to the people affected, which means we won't see them if we were infected until Tuesday. So somebody potentially has had my name, birth date, and social security number for 8 days before I will even know about it. And a toll-free hotline has been set up, which won't be in effect until Tuesday.
If you don't throw away the letter from RIT is another request for donations.
Right.
Yeah.
RIT's Public Safety Department and the Monroe County Sheriff's Office are investigating the incident. Thanks, folks. RIT officials said in their message that they don't know whether the personal information has been accessed. Well, of course not. The laptop was stolen. In the online message, officials said, "We share the concern and frustration." I bet not, because I bet your name's not in there.
Right.
"That this incident has caused for our community, which is why we established a hotline, launched a thorough investigation, and have issued notifications. The hotline, which can be called through a relay service, will be available from Tuesday through September 26th. Hotline hours are 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on weekdays and on Saturdays from 10 to 4. RIT also suggested that people who were affected call the fraud departments of a major credit bureau, although they won't know until at earliest Tuesday, to place a fraud alert on their credit files. If fraud is found, people should notify police and call RIT Public Safety so they can commiserate, but you're still stuck because some moron idiot had your birthday and social security number on their laptop. We have laws about that, by the way, at RIT. It's supposed to be encrypted if you're going to keep that kind of data on your laptop. Want to bet it was?
Maybe it was. No.
They would have said that. It wouldn't have been a problem.
Mm-hmm. I've gotten bit by that in the past as well. I received a letter. Now, nothing came of this incident in particular, but I received a letter saying that my information was stolen on a laptop. And my question is, why is there any personal information at any time in an institution on a laptop?
That
data should live on a server and stay on the server. Use your laptop and to manipulate it, but you don't carry that data.
Right. I can't tell you why your data was on that laptop because I'm not allowed to use that kind of language on the air.
I understand.
Because the person doing it was a... Exactly. Thank you, Alex.
Not to mention the people that let him do it.
Exactly. Well, I just...
I'm wondering is he didn't tell anybody for a week, and that's why they're not telling us for a week.
Well, I don't really care what the reason is.
Well, you got to give him a little time to look for the thing.
The other thing is nobody ever asked me if I was willing to be part of a control group. So if my data are in there, then they were accessed without my permission. That's not going to end well for somebody.
It's one of those blanket permissions
probably
at the bottom line of some form you signed at some point.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, I'm not happy. I am really, really, really not happy. And I don't know if there's going to be lawsuits. I don't know what's going to happen, but...
stay tuned.
Exactly.
Dave,
right.
Slip him another shot.
I don't even need a rant about this. I just...
You've already done the rant for the week.
I'm unhappy.
I don't blame you.
Happy. Yep. All right. Our next caller, Maxine, calm me down. Maxine, where are you calling from, Maxine?
Well, this is Steve, Maxine's husband. We're calling from New Hampshire.
Wow, excellent.
Well, we're on vacation. The thing is, we live in Greece. You know us. We're the ones who used to bring our kids and the parachute harness to the public appearances.
Oh, yes. How are you?
Yeah, we're doing okay, except for the last few months, when I try to use Roadrunner dial-up, which is the only thing we can get up here because my uncle does not believe in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He has rabbit ears on his TV, which he uses like 2 hours a day. So anyway, we need to use the dial-up, and it's always worked in the past. I've had my laptop for about 3 years. It had an internal modem that died a couple years ago. I was using an outboard USB modem. And suddenly, a couple visits ago, we've been trying to track this problem down for a couple months now. I would get the message. It would get in as far as verifying username and password, and then a error window would pop up that said no PPP configured. Check your network settings. Now, I've checked about every network setting I know where to find, and everything is where it should be as far as we can tell.
Have you disabled the broken internal modem in your BIOS?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or in
yeah.
the hardware manager?
It's so broken it doesn't even see it. So
okay, so it's totally
dialed out just fine. So I mean, and the thing is, we called Roadrunner last week, and they went through a couple of, they sent us to a couple of different levels of tech support. And then they said, well, it's probably your modem. You should check with the OEM for the modem. But we've tried it with a couple of different modems now. Three, four.
Have you tried it when you're here in town?
Oh, yeah, that's where we were mainly trying to get it. I tried to call in last week, but you were jammed up.
Yeah, we are.
I posted it on your message board, too, but I only got like a... I never heard of Roadrunner having a dial-up. That was the big answer I got. So
The other question helpful. I would have for you there... Max, is on the laptop, when you boot it up, you know, you go into the BIOS, you want to make sure that both the COM ports, usually there's the A and the B COM ports, are shut off or disabled. Because, you know, if one of those is trying to use that for the modem and is trying to get out, say, through a card now, it might think that something else is on that. Even though you've got the modem disabled, it still uses that COM port number.
The other thing is...
Usually that's when the modem won't dial out, when you
right.
have a port conflict. But this is, like I say, it gets all the way
right.
through verifying username and password, and then it gives us the PPP thing.
Right. What's happening is the modem is dialing fine, it is connecting fine, and then what it's supposed to do is hand off to the networking stack.
Mm-hmm.
That's where PPP comes in. It's point-to-point protocol. It's the thing that's used by the network to connect what's essentially an Ethernet stack mm-hmm. to the modem.
Right.
What it sounds like is happening is that either your PPP stack is damaged in some way, or, and this is more likely, it's still now trying to connect through the Ethernet port. So what you have to do is turn off Ethernet.
Okay, I can try that.
In the settings for network connectivity, make sure that either the modem stuff is first or you just disconnect it from Ethernet.
Isn't it the top option? You can say when you go into the network connections, how there's the three options.
Right.
You want the top one. It's the bottom one. The bottom one, which says only dial. Because the top one says never dial. The middle one is... use dial if network not present. And the very bottom one is dial only.
So either the bottom two, but really you should change it by hand to dial only when you're up at your in-laws.
I've actually tried reinstalling the dial-in, the Roadrunner
yep.
dialer.
But it has nothing to do with...
every time I reinstall it, the use the dial when necessary or something
right.
thing gets checked, and I have to uncheck it later because every time...
The problem...
Right.
Yeah, the problem is not with the Roadrunner dial-up software. It's with Windows PPP stack.
That's what it looks like.
You may need to...
I tried uninstalling TCP/IP, but Windows XP won't let you do that like we were always able to before.
Right.
There is a procedure to reset TCP/IP, which I've also tried, and that didn't work.
What's your WinIP socket, the socket fix?
Yeah, that might...
I've got that too, and I haven't... I tried it before, but I haven't tried it since I reset the TCP/IP, so maybe...
Right. Well, try that, but the thing I would say is set it to go always dial when you're out of town and see if that fits. Well, anywhere to try it, of course.
Yeah.
But I think that'll do it, because what it sounds like is happening is that once it connects, the PPP is kicked out of the way by the Ethernet stack.
Yep.
And you want to tell it, don't load the Ethernet stack.
So dial mm-hmm. only would work.
And the other thing you could try is the system file checker, just to see if any of your PPP software is damaged and needs to be replaced.
Oh, see, that's the other thing. I was wondering about, you know, if I've got a corrupted DLL somewhere, you know. What is the system file checker? I don't think I'm even familiar with it.
It's under Tools, System Accessories, something in there. The easiest way is to go to the run.
That because, like Nick said, he's getting connected. If there was getting a DLL, he'd get someone out of the area. He's
right.
Actually
you guys are borrowing way too much trouble, and you're way too far up the stack.
Yep.
He gets connected. it dials.
Right. So it's not the dialing. It's in the PPP
right.
section.
Yep. It's possible that SFC will find a problem, but I would start going for the always dial first.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
SFC can take a while to run. It's not a bad idea to run it. I'm not saying that, but yeah, I think that the best thing to do at this point
is you want to check that PPP. And if that doesn't work, you can try the SFC.
Right.
At the run prompt, do SFC space slash scan now.
Right, right.
That will run it and see if there's any damage to the Windows files it can fix.
And that slash is the forward slash on the one underneath the question mark key. We find, man.
Yeah, I'll look that up and see if I can get some help on it just so I can know how to use it later.
Right, right, right. But I would try that always dial thing first.
Okay. Let us know.
All right, thanks.
Cool,
thanks, Steve.
Okay, if I can get online, I'll send you some email.
All right, excellent. And tell Maxine that we're not that scary. She could talk to us next time, too.
Well, she's done some of the work on this, but I have, too, so she figured I could talk faster and take over. So.
Okay, and besides, now she's sitting back drinking coffee while you're on the phone trying to explain things.
Actually,
she's not that dumb, really.
My phone rang in the meantime, and she had to answer that because I got a call from somebody else because I'm on her phone right now.
Yeah.
It's all this technology. Don't you love technology?
No.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Not always.
Thanks,
yeah.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Bye,
only
guys.
When it works.
Take it easy.
So, that was Maxine. So long, Maxine. Oh, that sounds like our break music. All right. We're going to take another break. I can't hear a thing today either. I'm a mess. We're going to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. Once again, it's Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel. I'm Nick Francesco. We've got a couple open phone lines, a couple people on the line. Give us a call. We're here ready to take your phone calls on computers or, you know, pretty much we'll talk about anything. Back in just a couple of minutes on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Hey, a security flaw on Apple's iPhone allows unauthorized users to gain easy access to private contacts and emails even when the device is locked, but the company said a fix is on the way. It'll probably be available Tuesday. 8 days. I'm sorry. Popular technology blog Gizmodo and an online forum run by the Mac Rumors site showed that it took only 3 taps to gain access to locked iPhones, which were on the latest 2.02 iPhone software. A spokes individual said that Apple was aware of the problem and was ready with a software update to fix it. In the meantime, she recommended users set the iPhone's home button to open up the phone's iPod music collection rather than the phone's favorites menu. The spokes individual did not say when the software update would be made available. The flaw could be seen as a momentary setback and Apple's ambitious plans to compete against Research in Motion, whose BlackBerry smartphone has become standard-issue device in corporate businesses around the globe. Early in August, technology research firm Gartner issued a report that said iPhone software had met Gartner's minimum requirements for business support, although some issues persisted. Last week, Apple released a software update for the iPhone that reportedly helps fix problems connecting to faster third-generation or 3G wireless networks after receiving a flurry of online complaints from customers around the world. Apple, which started selling the new 3G iPhone on July 11th, said it expected to sell 10 million iPhones by the end of 2008. I have to say, one of the things I really like about the BlackBerry is that if I lose it, I don't have a BlackBerry, but if I did, if I lose it, I can tell the people who run our Bez server, our BlackBerry Enterprise server, and they can set it so that the next time somebody turns it on, it erases itself. How cool is that?
People have almost as cool as if they could have it blow up in the guy's hand.
Exactly.
People have discovered inside the iPhone what looks like a kill list, implying that Apple can erase the iPhone and delete applications.
And until they do, if I were the security guy for a company, I could not in good conscience allow my employees to buy iPhones, or at least to put my corporate data on them.
Yeah. It was interesting how the backlash was arguing both sides. If there's a kill list, that means they can kill bad programs, which is good. But if there's a kill list, that means they can kill any program they want, which is bad.
Well, didn't they take some tethering program down?
Yeah, they've removed it from the store. There was for a while a program that would allow you to tether your iPhone to use it on your computer. And they did take that off the store. People have bought it from the manufacturer directly. And the rumor is that AT&T is working on their own tethering option because tethering is in violation of the AT&T contract you signed for the iPhone. So now
right.
We're back
tethering
to that contract
means
law.
That you can connect your computer to your cell phone to use it as your internet connection.
which is very common with most of the mid to high end cell phones.
Right.
On the AT&T network, it's Edge or the new HSDPA, and on the Verizon network, it's EVDO.
Right.
Which is kind of neat, being able to use your computer on the internet without finding a hotspot and someone looking over your shoulder. A lot of our business customers get that for their computers.
Right. All right, our next caller is Marty. Are you in Niagara or Niagara Falls?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. How are you? Are you in Niagara or Niagara Falls?
Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls. Slowly we turn to Marty. What's your question, Marty?
Well, first, did you get your van overheating fixed?
Was I on the air a little while ago?
If you weren't a little while ago, you were, yeah.
Well, that was, they couldn't reproduce the symptoms.
Yeah, right.
Gotta go back to Toronto.
Okay. We'll fix that in post.
I have a Dell laptop computer that is basically a desktop that hardly ever moves, and I'm getting vertical lines on the screen. Started out with one, and now it's up to hundreds. And it's just straight lines up and down the screen.
Yep.
Do they change when you open and close the lid?
I hadn't noticed that.
What that usually means is the wires that travel from the bottom to the top and go through the hinge are getting frayed by opening and closing over time.
Okay. But it doesn't. Well, obviously it closes.
Time for a new laptop.
Yeah.
Right.
In general, if you're really lucky, it's the $20 cable, but then 4 hours of labor to replace it, or you replace the whole display assembly for $500-$600 or so.
Right.
Yeah. Or come see you guys for a new laptop.
Right.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it. One of the things that I always suggest is when you buy a laptop, get the extended warranty.
Oh yeah.
Oh well, we did. This is a couple years old.
There you go.
And you know,
doesn't owe you anything.
But the thing that it hooks to my wife's sewing machines, so we can't go beyond XP because her sewing machines only use XP.
Well, luckily, if you go to Dave or Steve and buy a laptop, you can still get XP on it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Well, that's probably, well.
At no additional cost.
Right.
Some of the stores will make you pay extra for the second
$90
license.
$90 to install, get rid of Vista and put XP in.
Yeah, I've seen that, and that's what bothered me, so.
It should bother everybody.
Means I get to make a trip to Rochester, I guess.
How exciting is that, huh?
Come on down.
Okay.
Welcome to America.
I'm sure, yeah.
But the good news for you is that during the day, most of the traffic's going the other way, and at night it's all coming back, so you'll be good.
Well, I come along the lake, so.
There you go.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
All right,
we are going to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, and the great Alex Vanderweel, who's doing just a phenomenal job in there today. We're very, very lucky to have her. She's great. It is 40 minutes after the hour. We're going to give you some of those little economic dramas that make it possible to put on our shows. And when we come back on the other side, we'll have more news, weather, sports. We just might possibly hear from Uncle Dave if we can slap him away. And we'll be bringing you all of that from the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. Well, as you can hear from the sounds, the music behind me, it is that time once again. So, kids, grab your footy jammies and a mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. And if we can slap him away, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Lucy Lou, this is a repeat.
Hold it. I got to strap myself in. Go ahead.
Yep. Well, this is going to be another repeat because as much as I'd love to help you, and this is going to be a double rant this week, just reminding folks of two things. One, again, just to go back, and I don't care where the H you live, the heck you live, when you sign up for the Soundbites forums, just put in a city and a state. I don't care if it says Nome, Alaska, as long as it's got a city and a state, and I know you're legit. Folks were criticizing me in the forum. Well, don't want to give out too much personal information. Just saying Rochester, New York. They don't know where the heck you are in Rochester, so give it up.
Say New York, New York.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no one says you have to tell the truth.
The point is the robots that are trying to break in and give us, you know, porn and spam are do not put in a city and state.
In fact, they're right. starting to put the spam in the fields for city, state, right. name, right. everything.
Because
yeah.
it's just getting so hectic. You know, and I sit there and try to, like I say, check at least two or three times a day just to keep it up. But 99.75% of the time, it's always spam. Going on to the next one. Yeah, I had another customer, and, you know, I feel bad for folks. But you know what? I can't do your house cleaning and your organizational services, too. When you can't find the disk for the computer, it's like, what the H do you want me to do? If I don't have the original disk, right now I've been running into this with Dell computers, and I'll say the name, Brett, Dell, with the XP Media Edition 2005. These folks are going ahead and, you know, getting the machines messed up, especially with Service Pack 3 seems to be the culprit. And then they're bringing them in, and I say, okay, well, I got to do a reinstall. Where's your CDs? I don't know if I can find them. Why, is that a problem? No, not for me. You just don't get to use the computer.
Well, then you have to buy new ones from Dell, $30, $40 yeah. bucks.
Right.
And they go, well, wait a minute.
If you're lucky.
You just can't fix it.
If it's not a current
yes,
model.
Yes, I can fix it if you have the CDs.
Or you buy a brand new copy of Windows and with a new serial number.
Oh, yeah, well, they are. I get some of them say, well, they said that was going to be $70. Well, guess what? You got to pay the $70. There's just no magic fix, and there's nothing I can do about it. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I've said this before, and I know I'm repeating on this rant, but that's the way life is. I wish I could help,
but
sorry,
I can't. It is important to remind people, particularly those of you buying new computers, keep all the CDs. All of them. They really don't take up that much space. Find somewhere to put them. And
some of the HP towers, I really like this about the little HP mini towers. They have a CD holding reservoir in the tower itself. Yeah. So you leave your CDs in there.
Well, what I do is when I give a person a box, you know, a brand new computer, it comes. I take the motherboard box and I put all the CDs and all the component parts, the screws, the extra enclosures that block, say, the 5 1/4 bays and everything else. That all goes in one nice box, and it's labeled PC for the motherboard.
So when you want to put another hard drive in it later, the screws are there, too.
Yeah, right. I mean, everything is there in one nice, concise box. And I tell folks, if anything goes wrong with the computer, just bring the box back and this box. We have everything. You're good to go.
There are just too many hundreds of models. It's worse on the PC world. We get the same thing on the Mac side, too. Well, you don't. Doesn't Apple give you those discs? I wish.
Yeah, right.
There's only been 500 models of Macintosh over the year, but how many thousands of models of PCs, and they all take different discs.
And the worst of the PCs that you have to create your own discs, and of course you only need them if the hard drive dies, and by then it's too late.
Yeah. Well, and they never got around to it. That's the other big thing that
Then I can't get around to fixing your computer. All right. Everybody grab hold. Everybody grab an arm or a leg. I'm going to give them a shot for the week. That's it. We're putting Uncle Dave back on the shelf. We're going to fold them up a little extra tight this week, strap them down, stick them up on the shelf, stick them in the overhead compartment. All you kids, feel free to take off your footy jammies and get dressed again and put your mugs in the sink, and we'll clean them off for next week. And that's it for Uncle Dave for another week. All right, we are going to take a break. We're going to take a break so that you can hear the things you really want to listen to on Wham! The news, the weather, the sports, and all the important things. When we come back on the other side, we will have the CEO of Jot.com with us to talk to for about 20 minutes. That'll be great. Dave Enreich, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 57 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I'm very excited to say that we have on the line a very special guest, Mr. John Pollard, who's the CEO of Jot.com. And what why don't I let him tell you that himself? Mr. Pollard, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to be here.
It's very exciting to have you. Why don't you give us the 10-second elevator speech on Jot?
Well, Jot is something that is very simple but incredibly useful. Essentially, from any cell phone, you dial a toll-free number, 1-866-JOTT123, so Jot123. You'll hear a quick question like, who do you want to jot? And you could say yourself if you wanted to create a note to yourself, or you could say somebody's name if you wanted to send them a message. Very simple. You hear a beep. You say something, and you could hang up. And what Jot does is take your voice, convert it to text, and deliver it to that person or to yourself as a note. So you either never forget anything again if you need to remember it, or you can email or text somebody from the road completely hands-free. Very, very simple, but we've had an amazing response and have almost 500,000 customers.
Well, I am one.
Great.
I can't begin to tell you how absolutely thrilled I am. Somebody told me about it, and I thought, yeah, right. So, of course, I immediately tried it, and I tried to trip it up. I don't know, whatever the software you've got running in the back end or whatever's going on in the back end, it's awfully good. And I've used it for 100 things. And, of course, now now you're out of beta, and it's an actual product now, so people can get a free version or pay for more features.
That's right. That's right. You know, we took a little bit of time to try to get it exactly right, and, you know, we call that beta.
Yeah.
And a little more than a week ago, we came out of beta, which really means that we are making a business out of this. You know, we have a great team here in Seattle of pretty dedicated people, and we want to be able to stick around for a while. So we have a free product that's still amazing, actually, that does almost everything except for letting you send emails to people or send text messages to people with your voice. But we have a really, really cheap paid-for product, too. It's only $3.95 a month. It's like a dime a day, a little more than a dime a day. And that lets you send emails and texts from the road, as many as you want. And we've had great response.
Okay, now this is where I got a little confused because I'm looking at the page.
Okay.
And it's for $12.95 a month, you get X, and for $3.95 a month, you get X minus Y, and for free, you get something else.
Right.
But all three of them say voice to text, notes and reminders notes and reminders unlimited, but if I want to send voicemail to somebody else, then I pay for it. Oh, I get it.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a really good reason for that. A lot of people have said, hey, wait a minute, you know, I love sending email and text to people. It's really important to me. It's a safer way of messaging while on the road, et cetera. Why are you charging for that? And there's a really simple answer for that, is that we actually, on the ad-supported side of things, where you know, we would get paid, we'd fund this thing by actually presenting some advertising. Right. We can't do that if you're sending the message to somebody else, A. And B, we asked customers, and they said, you know, if you put an advertisement in something that I'm sending to somebody else, that's going to be really dicey. People might not like that. So we said, all right, that makes a lot of sense. So we're going to actually put that feature only in the paid-for version.
I completely agree with that. But I will tell you that the ability to send somebody a text message while I'm driving, I'm part of a group called Text Smart.
Yeah.
It's a not-for-profit group that's trying to raise awareness among teenagers of the dangers of texting while driving.
Yep.
And the ability to send a text message through my hands-free set to someone is just unbelievable. It's very freeing. I can actually, you know, send information to people without taking my hands off the wheel or my eyes off the road.
Have you seen this retro handset?
Yes, I have.
It's a traditional handset, an ancient phone.
So how?
That's Bluetooth, and you crook it in your shoulder.
Right. So how are? Yeah. It's pretty cool, actually. So how are things going? You've got millions of customers, and things are going along. I have to ask, how do you do this?
Yeah, is this people actually, you know, humans actually typing it, or do you have really, really cool software?
Well, it's both, actually. So if we just had people on this thing, on the other end, typing it up, there'd be a couple problems with that. One would be cost.
Right.
And the second would be just the ability to expand the business as fast as internet web businesses expand. You know,
and there's a privacy issue.
There's a privacy issue, although we've done some very clever things there. We've modeled our business on the medical transcription business.
Right.
So there's a very, very large business where hospitals and doctors send sound files to people and have them transcribed and then sent back. It's a way to keep costs down. And there's really, really interesting privacy mechanisms in place for that, and we've tried to model our business very much on that. So we're very, very hardcore about it, but we've done the right investments there to keep privacy where it needs to be, which is at the top of our concerns. But we basically said, listen, the way people are going to jot is going to be really varied. There's going to be some people who leave long jots. There are going to be people who speak, who leave short jots. Some people with strong accents. Some people with sound like Tom Brokaw and, you know, have no accent. You know, sound like you guys. You know, radio guys have perfect voices and pronounce things well. And
you haven't listened to the show much, have you?
Sorry.
I'd like to jot my cousin, please. Tell him I'll be late getting to the airport.
Well, yeah, let me tell you something. One thing I thought was really interesting is that we have a ton of customers in the Deep South. And, you know, I actually love the accents down there. It's as American as can be. But it's traditional speech recognition programs really struggle with some of that.
Right.
And we actually do a pretty good job with it because we're able to correct it. So, to make a very long story short, what we do is we have a couple of different providers of speech recognition technologies, and we use the best results from either of those, and then we clean things up. And we've written software that allows us to do that very, very quickly and cheaply and anonymously. So people who are doing it have absolutely no idea who the speaker is.
Right.
And that's just getting better and better over time. Really, our approach is, you know, if we could get 100% of things converted with a machine, great. That would be the best possible. But what we're really looking for is somebody leaves a jot and there are a couple of mistakes in the recognition,
right.
Cleaning those bits up very quickly. And that's what we're doing, and we're doing it well.
Well, I've sent a couple of jots where one or two words were phonetically correct and were followed by paren, question mark, paren.
That's right.
That was so cool.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about speech recognition, and you know, I don't know if your crowd is interested in this, but
I don't care about them. I'm interested. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that really struggles with are, like, names in place.
Right.
You know, how do you spell Smith? Do you spell it S-M-I-T-H? Do you spell it S-M-I-T-H-E, S-M-Y-T-H?
Right.
You know, all sorts of things like that, those proper nouns that have, that are phonetically are the same but are different spellings. And so that's a struggle for us. But we also have some cool technology that's dealing with that over time as well. But for the time being, we think we're doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, we've been trying to find a way to automatically transcribe this show without having someone sitting there typing and just feed it the audio file. And
rough, huh?
That's very rough.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
We haven't found a product that will really do the job. And that's a lot of that is because we talk over each other, and sometimes people call in like on a cell phone and they're a little crackly and stuff like that. I mean, that's part of it, but it's just... you know, whatever you guys have written, even if you're passing some of it off to humans, whatever you guys have written is just industrial strength, and I'm just very impressed.
It's not easy. You know, we have a lot of friends down in the Bay Area and other technology centers, and we've talked about this early days. They're like, you got to be kidding me. You know, this isn't a pure silicon solution. You actually have people in the loop. And what we've found now, this is now 2 years later, is that there's a general acceptance of this approach.
Right.
There are people who are, Google's done some similar things with some of its technology. Nuance, which is the big provider of speech recognition technologies, 3 months ago announced that they have a 3,000-person call center doing exactly the same thing.
Right.
So what's happened is it's gone from a, why would you do it this way? It's not super techie, to, wow, this is not only really techie in very, very advanced software, but it's really difficult to do and difficult to copy, which is great.
I've heard Lee Laporte mention Jack quite a few times on his shows, and he says now and then he'll thank the transcriber for the great job they're doing, and it comes back transcribed to him.
Well, as in, yeah, you're right. I mean, they have, it's very, very strict that these people who do a great job are very dedicated, are under strict instructions not to do any kind of interpretation.
Right.
Right? And so that is tough, but they do the best they can. And some, you'd be amazed what people say in Tejat. You'd be absolutely amazed. And, you know, it's the whole gamut of people wanting to talk to somebody because they're lonely.
Right.
To somebody speaking Chinese in Tejat and expecting a miracle. It's just, you know, it's really quite interesting.
That's funny. I'm at RIT, and I often have an interpreter in my classes. And if I talk to the interpreter, he or she will sign that. I'm just saying, you know, let me know if I'm going too fast or whatever, and they'll sign that as I'm talking. And I say, okay, because they really are, when they're standing there, just a machine.
That's right.
We have a very large deaf community here in Rochester, so we're a lot of us are used to TTYs and telephone voice. I forget what they're called now. Voice relay. Yeah.
We should tell people that if the free but ad-supported version, you get 15 seconds to record your time. You can record as many as you want. And it's just notes and reminders to yourself for a mere $4 a month, $3.95 a month.
10 cents a day.
15 seconds. Unlimited voice messages. You get. You can manage notes and stuff in your email. And for that $4 a month, you can send email and text messages to anyone you want. So, and it works with. And the free one works with Jot. It's Jot Express and Jot for the iPhone. Believe it or not.
Yep.
The $4 a month adds Jot for Outlook, and for $13 a month, you get a half a minute of recording time. All of that other stuff, and it adds the BlackBerry, which I think is a brilliant idea because you are going to get corporate America all over this.
Yeah, we've had great response to that. The BlackBerry, I'm using quote signs here in the air, the application, really what it is, it's an extremely small piece of code, very lightweight, that lets anybody who uses the BlackBerry reply to an email with their voice. It looks exactly...
It's not a
separate program. When you're in the BlackBerry email application, you just hit the BlackBerry button and you'd select reply with Jot. And instead of having to type out on the keyboard your response, you can just speak it. And that's an amazing advance for people. I mean, there's some people on their BlackBerrys who are amazingly fast.
Let's face it.
This is faster.
Right. And let me just tell you, I am incredibly impressed by this. I'm afraid we have to take a break now, but I'm incredibly impressed by this. It's a brilliant product, and please do me a personal favor. Let me know when you guys go public. I'm very impressed. The company is Jot. The website is jot.com. Lets you send hands-free stuff.
We'll post it up on our webpage.
It'll be on our webpage. Thank you so much, Mr. Pollard, for joining us. John Pollard, CEO of jot.com. There he goes, everybody. Let's give him a big hand. Thank you, sir. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Have fun.
All right, bye.
All right, we're going to take a break. We will be back in just... That was great. It's a pretty nifty product. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening to Soundbites. We've got calls from all over the country waiting on the line. We'll pick them up right after the break on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And, of course, that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Woo! Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Alex Vanderwell.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite.
Now, is that Johnny Cash or is that Joaquin Phoenix doing Johnny Cash?
Good question. And completely irrelevant. All right. And that's Steve in a nutshell, isn't it?
You nailed it, Nick.
Trivial stuff that we don't give a rat's butt about.
We're going to skip the news because Tuscaloosa's calling me, but I'm not going. Our next caller is Rick from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Welcome, Rick.
Hey,
you called before.
Yeah.
Welcome to America.
I'm just trying to expand your horizons here.
Thank you. We need it. Now, you're hearing us over the web?
Yes.
Because you haven't yet talked your local Clear Channel station into carrying us?
Well, you know, I'm trying. But
that's what I like to hear.
That's okay. That's great.
So, yeah, I got a funny one here. I've got a Dell Tower system that I have a Epson all-in-one machine connected to via USB.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I try to start up the PC, it tries to boot off of that Epson device.
Yeah.
And I've gone through the setup, and I honestly can't figure out how to prevent it from doing that.
Well, the easiest way is leave it unplugged.
Well, that's what I have been doing. Yeah.
But what's your first, in the BIOS, what's your first boot device?
When I look in the configuration, let's see, let me do that.
Should be the hard drive or the CD-ROM?
Yep. It's I have an older machine. It's the floppy drive.
Well, that's probably why.
It might, yeah.
And below that, is there something called USB legacy support? Because oftentimes when you turn that on, it sees USB devices as a floppy drive and tries to boot
from it. What you want to do is make sure, change that floppy so it goes right directly to the hard drive.
Okay. Yeah, because I could try that. I haven't done that.
Yeah, if you
that's also a security thing, by the way. If the first boot device is the hard drive, it makes it harder for somebody to stick a CD in your machine or a thumb drive on your USB port and boot up your machine so that they can do nefarious things to it.
Okay, all right.
That's a tip for everybody, by the way. Wake up, pay attention.
All right, I'll give that a shot. The only other thing I was going to tell you is there's another line item in the setup that says hard disk drive, and when hard disk drive sequence, excuse me. And when I pull that up, it lists first BIOS boot devices.
You know why.
And then second, it lists USB device not installed.
Right. Does your Epson printer have a memory card reader on it?
Yes, it does.
It's seeing the memory card reader as a boot device.
Yep.
So you, in the order of the hard drives, you need to make sure that your physical hard drive comes first.
Yeah, that's got
to
be the very first
or
thing to boot from.
Or if you can turn off that USB hard drive option, that's another way to do it. Because I've also seen this with USB hard drives connected as a backup drive. It wants to boot that drive
first. But like I say, if he makes it so that that's the very first device it looks for, instead of the floppy, it'll just go right to the hard drive, boot up, and then those extra card reader slots in that printer will show up as extra drives thereafter.
Okay. All right, I'll give that a shot. I got one other quick question for you.
Go for it.
Should I upgrade to Service Pack 3?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
How, well, we're seeing...
You were going to say, should I upgrade to Vista?
Vista, yeah. It depends. How, what version did your computer come with initially?
XP Pro, and I'm at Service Pack 2.
Right, but which Service Pack did it come with initially?
Oh, 1.
Yeah, we're seeing more problems with people who have upgraded from Prime to 1 to 2 to 3. If it came with 2 to begin with, then the 3 upgrade's been pretty easy.
Okay.
Yeah. But, when you install SP3, make sure you leave the option checked to save the install file so you can uninstall it if you have problems.
In case you got to backtrack.
Also, please back up twice before you install Service Pack 3.
Okay.
Well, so that at least your data are safe.
I have a slave hard drive, so that's where I store all my critical stuff.
That's there good. Go. So install.
Smart man.
Still, make a backup. And then unplug that slave. Oh, is it an internal drive?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. But, yeah, make sure that you've got it backed up.
Okay.
Never a bad idea.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. What's the weather down there? Do I actually want to know?
Well, it's, let's see. You guys try to keep track of days over 90. I try to keep track of days under 90. Relative humidity, I'm thankful for days when the humidity is below 70%.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The Jewel of the South apparently has a few flaws. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, of course, I don't have to shovel anything in the wintertime.
There is that. We'll all come and visit you in the winter. You come and visit us in the summer.
Yeah, but at least I don't have tornadoes and hurricanes coming up my backyard.
Cottonmouth.
We just have blizzards.
This is true. We just had like,
and earthquakes.
We had like 3-plus days of rain nonstop, you know, because of the last hurricane.
Right.
So. And there'll probably be more of that with the next one that's coming.
Yeah,
probably.
Anchor down.
All right, and don't forget, you need an uninterruptible power supply to protect your system against brownouts.
With line conditioning.
I haven't bought one of those yet.
You need to, because when that sort of weather starts up, it's not the spikes that'll do your computer in, it's the low levels of electricity, the brownouts,
that can do damage.
I use the old-fashioned way. It's when a storm's coming, I shut it off and unplug it.
Well, that's good, but it doesn't promise that for hours or days after the storm that there won't be fluctuations in power.
Yep.
Okay.
So get that uninterruptible power supply with line conditioning.
Very good.
All right.
Let us know how you make out.
All right.
Thanks.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Rick. From Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
What else was Tuscaloosa known for?
Groucho Marx.
Shot an elephant in my pajamas. I got in my pajamas, I'll never know.
Yeah.
I couldn't get the tusks out. But in Alabama, the Tuscaloosa. All right.
Steve is too young.
Steve is way too young for just dang near anything. Our next caller is Mark from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question? Why do they hesitate like there's another Irondequoit anywhere?
There could be.
Yeah, I suppose there could be. What's your question, Mark?
Just been enjoying Feisty Fawn.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to change the color on my the page.
Yep.
Or pages. Like my 6.6 box.
Right.
And I want to make adjustments, and I should have not because I got a blank screen now. Can I repair that?
There are a couple of ways to repair that. What he's talking about is Feisty Fawn is one of the Ubuntu
releases.
And what I don't know what exactly you did, but it sounds like you've done some damage to your...
Probably to the resolution.
May have changed the resolution or frequency to something beyond the monitor supports.
Right.
Well, it said it's under development.
When
I went to change the... Wanted to change, I got a box that said under development could be harmful to your computer.
And so you did it anyway.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. You may have picked one of those themes that isn't quite good yet. One of the things that you can do is to... trying to think of something easier than the nuclear option.
Reboot in command line only mode?
Well, you don't even need to do that, actually, but a reboot didn't fix it?
I wanted to call you guys instead. I didn't want to...
First reboot. That may fix the whole problem. If it didn't save the configuration, which it probably didn't if it's that broken, then reboot should fix it. That's first. Second thing is, if it did damage that, when you try to reboot, it won't be able to go into the graphical mode, and it'll suggest that you redo graphics. It may start that for you. Alternately, you can do one of two things. You can type dpkg-reconfigure, dpackage-reconfigure, and that will reconfigure everything in your machine. So that's the nuclear option. The other thing you could try to do is, from a command line, type sudo, obviously, to become root.
Right.
Space aptitude. Space, is it reinstall? Wait a minute, hold on. As Nick frantically types, install, remove, purge, forbid, update. I thought reinstall was a choice. Apparently it's not anymore, so...
Well, it might be in Feisty. You're looking at what, Hardy?
Yeah, but he's using Feisty. You're right. I'm using Feisty. Reinstall is an option. So, sudo aptitude reinstall, say, X or one of the X's.
Okay.
I just found a couple of things in the Ubuntu forum on how to reset your video driver.
Oh, and that would probably be easier. Yeah.
Of course, he can't get to that because he can't see his screen.
Right.
I could throw on a different computer.
Yeah.
I love Ubuntu.
There's a good chance that rebooting is just going to solve your problem.
Yeah, I suspect that's your thing. It would be XOR dash. Son of a pup. Did this a couple of days ago, and I can't remember. Xserver dash
Xserver.xorg. I just found it.
Dash Xorg. Yeah, Xserver dash Xorg.
Well, yeah, they say that dpkg hyphen reconfigure space Xserver hyphen Xorg.
Yeah, that should do it.
Okay. I'll post that link.
He'll post that link if you can get to it on another machine. But sure. Yeah, first try rebooting and then do the dpackage reconfigure xserve.xorg. And again, you should probably do that as sudo.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
You have a good day.
You too.
All right. Bye.
That is one of the things about Linux, is it runs so great, but if you start mucking about with it, at some point you will get into some sort of trouble that suddenly you realize you have no idea how to get out of because it's so new to you, you know? I mean, I still have that problem. I've been using Linux exclusively for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, there are things that I have to stop and think about and things that I really don't know how to do yet because I just haven't run across them. You know, we forget we had the same problem with Windows.
That's right.
You know,
DOS before that
and the Mac.
Yep.
I've just deleted my system folder. What do I do? Well, this, and this. But you've gone through it. The first time you went it, I'm sure the first time it happened to you, you panicked just as much as everybody else. Oh, crap. Now what?
Well, let's face it. It happened in Atari DOS and Commodore 64.
Exactly.
It's just part of the game.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, I've always said that I am completely agnostic about what operating system you use. It's whatever one does the best for you and works the way it works for you. For me, the best operating system is clearly Linux, but that's for me. It also apparently is for Mark, which is great. you know, whatever. It's a big deal. I hate to tell you this, but I use a Mac. Great. I use a Mac too. Sometimes it's just
they're just
whatever
tools.
You got. That's exactly right. They're just tools, and you use the tool. It's right for the job. I wouldn't insist you use a screwdriver if you're trying to build a wall, and I wouldn't insist you use a hammer if you're trying to take apart a computer. I might use a hammer to take apart a computer, but it wouldn't be one I want to put
Steve
together
to
again. We've seen Steve do it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 37 minutes after the hour, and you continue, for whatever sick reason of your own, to listen to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Alex Vanderweel.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, real quick, I want to remind you about the poll. Every week we do one at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's was about Windows 7. 308 of you voted, tying for number 157 on the all-time hit list. Thank you. And it was about Windows 7, the next version of Windows, and asking really what you thought of that. The overwhelming majority, 44% of you, said XP forever. 22% of you said the Linux. 15% of you said the Mac. 11 very sick people said can't wait. 6 Luddites, I don't even know how they got on the computer, wandered by, found one, said Dixon Ticonderoga number 2 forever. And 3 people who need help immediately said, or 10 people said Vista forever. This week's poll, of course, is about the news I read at the top of the hour. There's a company called SciStar, and they are making a clone of a machine from a company called Apple Computer. And Apple Computer is unhappy about that, and so they sued them. And now SciStar has countersued, saying that it's an antitrust issue, that Apple has so tightly bundled, if I can use the loaded word, their hardware with their software, that it is illegal and an antitrust violation. So that lawsuit is currently going on. So the question on all our minds is SciStar right to sue Apple? And so far, we've had 73 of you vote, 47% of you very honest said, I don't know, and I'm too lazy to Google it. 16% said, heck yeah. 14% no, Apple is perfect. 10% said, meh, the Linux forever. 8% said the Mac. Oh, wait. And 5% said Windows Rocksaurs. And that leaves 73 votes so far. So please vote in the poll. And I know you, when you're done with the poll, you're still frustrated. You need to vent a little more. So if you look underneath the poll, you will see a yellow box that will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Thank you. Well done. Where you can then leave an opinion on the poll. And when you do that, of course, you'll see that you're at my site, and there's some things you can't get at because you're not a member. But for a mere $15 a year, you can get in the forums, you can get my newsletter, you can search all my past stuff, which all by itself is worth the $15. So feel free to join AskNick.com. That would make me personally happy, and it would make my wife actually kind of ecstatic. So that's always a good thing. And then come on back to the Soundbites homepage and join some of the craziest people in the world playing around on there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim. Welcome, Jim. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Greece.
Greece, New York.
You bet.
That's too bad. I wanted it to be Greece, Apple. Okay. Greece.
Well, you've had Appaloosa. You've had a bunch of them. But
right.
What a wealth of knowledge you guys bring to the computer world. It's, what a gift you guys all collectively provide us.
Watson, my blushes. Thank you very much.
Well, my question is, I'm looking to buy a new computer, mm-hmm. and of course, the key thing in my mind is the processor, and they talk about 2 quads and 2 duos, and my concern is with, I don't want to jeopardize compatibility with some software. I do a lot of digital photography. I do some computer-aided design work, word processing, spreadsheets, that sort of thing. I'm not a gamer, so I don't need a high-powered thing, but I also am in a situation where I don't want it to be obsolete in just a couple of years.
Yeah, right. But even though you say you're not a gamer, Jim, the other thing is, you said the other keyword, you do graphics.
Yes, I do.
And that's just like being a gamer.
Particularly with CAD, you need some power, but there's 2 places you're going to get that power. One is in the processor itself, and the other is in the graphics card.
Gotcha.
And so, the processor manufacturers have reached a bottleneck over the years. They can't make the processors any faster, so they are adding more and more cores. So you'll see a dual core and quad core.
Yes.
And then it gets tricky where you have dual duals and dual quads.
The Pentiums.
Yep.
Yeah, the Pentium processor.
Right, and then you need to make sure that the software you buy can take advantage of those processors. So you need to know whether it will indeed work with multiple processors.
Yeah, and that's what I don't want to waste my money on is going with a hefty processor and find out that...
Yeah, but the thing of it is, though, Jim, right now, I would say, because of the price of the processors, all right, and you're dealing with software, they might be coming out with a new revision. That's the other thing. You don't want to back yourself into the corner that
Absolutely.
You don't go ahead and buy enough power that, say, your software is a year or two old, and then they turn around, just as you get this new machine, they go from, say, version 9 to now version 10, which takes full advantage of the quad core or dual core or all the memory. So you're in a kind of a catch-22. You don't want to buy a Cadillac when a mid-sized car will do you.
Right.
But you want to be able to have that feature that if down the road you need to, say within a year, and I only say a year because after that all bets are off,
Absolutely.
That you can still upgrade that particular machine.
And since the multi-core machines have been out for 3 or 4 years now,
right.
most of the current software versions can already take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Those that don't just ignore that second core, and there's usually no compatibility problems.
Okay. Right, but the other thing about multiple cores is you can do more things simultaneously
yes.
because the operating system will handle at least
right.
some of that for you.
It's so very common to have your email open and a web browser open and the real program you're working on open.
Right. And that leads us to RAM.
Yep.
The
yep.
more RAM you have, the better.
2 gigs minimum.
Minimum.
3 is
yeah,
better.
I'm thinking 3 or 4, yeah.
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 Well, then you run into the 64-bit issues. You can only get 3.3 in a 32-bit machine.
Mm-hmm.
So you put in 4 and it's...
use it as
Well,
cash.
He'll be getting a 64-bit
yeah.
machine. Jim, what program do you use for your digital photography?
Well, I've used several different ones, but right now it is... Yeah.
Well, let me ask this. Are you manipulating your images or are you just storing them in albums?
No, I do some adjustments to brightness and so forth, too, but I don't do... I wouldn't call it serious editing. It is more enhancement than it is editing.
Okay, you're not doing Photoshop quality stuff.
No.
Yeah, then, but still, what we've told you is right. You need to beef up everything as much as you can afford
yep.
in order to make sure that that machine will last you a few years and can do what you really want to do. Okay. We got to take a break.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your call.
You bet.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in, again, just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel, who seems more on top of things than... any of us are, and God bless her, thank goodness she is. Exactly. It is 49 minutes after the hour. We will be back with a whole lot more of the greatest computer show in the known universe. Soundbites, well, maybe not a whole lot more since we're done at one, but some more. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Alex Vanderweel.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, we need to tell you, because I almost forgot, and thank heaven these guys fixed that for me. We need to remind you about the Buffalo Bills season. There will be 11 weeks between now and Christmas, when 11 Sundays, when we are not on the air live.
Starting
next week.
This coming Sunday.
So here's the way that works. In the Soundbites forum, under Soundbites versus Buffalo Bills versus Second Life, Dave has listed all of the Sundays we will not be live. What we're going to do is two things. We will be here in the studio recording live from 10:30 to 11:30.
Not live.
Well, we'll be recording, excuse me. We'll be recording from 10:30 to 11:30, which will be played on the web stream only from 1 to 2. What we will then do is we will have another hour or so in Second Life. Now, we're debating as to whether or not that will start at noon and go till 1 till it goes on live on the air, which means we have to stop, otherwise we're going to be cutting into ourselves, or whether we do it at 2 after the first hour.
I mean, if we get home, if we just go home and just do an hour right there, because if we go home... and then get involved in something else. I mean,
right?
You
both ways. We'll get involved in something and then not get to it, Second Life, but it also gives us a hard stopping point.
Yes, it does, which is not a bad thing. So, all right, here's the plan. We will be on Second Life from noon to 1 on those days, and we will then be on the air pre-recorded from 1 to 2.
On the web stream, not on the air.
Right. On the web stream only, because on the air will be the Buffalo Bills.
It's confusing.
It does get confusing.
So we won't be able to take your questions on the air, so you need to email us your questions.
Yeah, right. There are multiple ways to get questions to us. You can put them in the web forum, in the Soundbites web forum. We'll set up a category. Dave will do that right now that says questions for... Dave will do that right now that says questions for...
that says,
you got to log in.
Yeah.
You got to log in.
I know.
Or maybe we won't do it right now. But we'll put one up that essentially says questions for the Buffalo Bills weeks or whatever we're going to call it. It should be pretty obvious. And you will also be able to put them on the board that Steve has set up in Second Life. There's a message board next to the screen where you can get your own Soundbites t-shirt.
They've set that up.
Who did I say?
Me.
I'm not doing anything well today. Shut up.
And we'll have the chat room open too, right?
And we'll have the chat room open as well.
Now, what email address should people use if we're
sending
that?
No. We don't have a special email address. And if they email their questions, we may miss them. Putting them in the forums.
Oh, okay.
Or putting them on the message board. If they want to, there's that little green thing out where you first res into Second Life. If you touch that, you can send me a message. That actually comes to my cell phone. And so so we'll have those. But we will not be doing a live show. So we'll be in Second Life from 12 to 1. And we'll be on the web stream from 1 to 2. On those 11 Sundays, which you can see in the... Have I confused you enough now?
Yeah.
And the website is wham1180.com.
No, the website is soundbites.org. Well, oh, for the stream, it's wham1180.com. Click listen now, and you'll be there. There are a couple of other places to get it, but it just takes you to the same stream anyway. So it'll be 11 weeks, and you got to... You know what? The folks at Wham have to make a living in order to keep us all on the air, and this is how they do it. They get the best stuff on the best station in town. There's nothing wrong with that. And rather than just cut us off completely, like they're doing to the other shows, they're giving us the web stream for an hour, and I think that's incredibly generous of them. And it would behoove all of us to write to the general manager here at Wham and thank him for his generosity in keeping us on the air.
Yeah.
Even on the weeks that the Buffalo Bills are doing their thing.
Very cool.
Yeah, I know it sounds like an annoyance and a problem, but they could just as easily have said, you know what, those 11 weeks are gone. Just stay home. Yeah. They're giving us the time, and that goes a long way for me. I'll tell you that right now.
The post is up there for what the Soundbites crew got wrong. There is now, you can post your questions right in there, and I'll print them off.
And be clear, we're not going to answer them there. We're going to answer them on the web
recording,
the webcast,
for the stream,
the web stream. Yeah,
that's what I put.
So that's the deal with that, and that's where we all stand. So you know what? And I've talked through pretty much all the time we had left. I don't think I have time for another call. I got like 12 seconds left before we're on the way out. Yeah, but we again. I just can't say enough that
encourage folks to come and join us in Second Life. You know,
come
what I
mean? In Second Life and come and talk to us in the chat room and all of that other stuff. We've got ways to get the word out without being actually on the air. But we again. Let me thank the folks at Wham for giving us this opportunity to be on the air, to be out there, even if we're not on the air. And that's it for another week, and not a moment too soon, I think. I want to apologize to all of you to whom we did not get, mostly because of my personal long-windedness. Call earlier. You know, we get the first half hour, first hour, it's light calls, and the second hour, the board is jammed. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel, who did a great job. Chris, of course, a magnificent job with all the stuff on the podcast. I'm Nick Francesco, 59 minutes after the hour. Thank you so much for joining us on another edition of Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.